Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. It's Jesse Green here at the control panels, as always. And today we're having a conversation about marketing your practice. We all understand the importance of it. However, many of us don't quite know how to do it in a practical sense. So today I'm going to be joined by Brent Hodgson from brenthodgson.com, and we're going to be talking all about the tiny tweaks that can enhance your marketing and take it to the next level. Now, before we do talk to Brent about that, what we're going to be talking about very quickly before we do is a couple of community service announcements. The first one is if you are a dentist and you'd like to get more information, more training, please do come across and join us in the Savvy Dentist Facebook group. We'd love to have you there. All you need to do is go to drjessegreen.com/Facebook and you'll find us. And equally, if you want to get more free tools, free resources, head across to your app store of choice, whether it's Google Play or the Apple App Store, and download the Savvy Dentist app. There's a ton of stuff there, and we are always adding more to it. So those are the public service announcements, but let's get on to the main show. Brent Hodgson, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Hey, thanks for having me here, Jesse.
Mate, I'm actually delighted. We've been having a long conversation off air, and it's been really enjoyable. So very much looking forward to this part of the conversation as well. Before we do get into the meat and potatoes, I want to congratulate you on your book. It does have a really cool title, Unassailable, and the subtitle is The Tiny Tweaks That Can Create an Unbeatable Advantage in Your Marketing. So, A, congratulations on the book. I know how much effort and work goes into producing it, and I salute you. But my question for you, before we do get into the meat and potatoes of our conversation, is when you wrote the book, what prompted you to sit down and write the book? Because given the work and effort that it does take, I know there must have been something you observed that you thought, you know what, I need to write about this. I need to tell people about this. What is it that you observed that prompted the book?
Thank you. Yeah, it was the culmination of a long period of, you know what, I should write that down. The thing that really lights me up is the tiny little things that make a really big difference. Because when you're working in marketing, you start to see little patterns where there's the Pareto principle coming across. You know the Pareto principle?
Yep. 80-20.
Yeah, exactly. These 20% of things create your 80% of results. And then even beneath that, there's 1 or 2% of things that create the 98% of results. And these sort of patterns, I started to go, huh, that's interesting. There's tiny little things that are making a big difference to marketing performance in all of these businesses. I got to write that down. And all of a sudden, I was bursting with all of these things that I wanted to be in a book.
So, okay, let's talk about these tiny little things. Firstly, what was it that you looked at when you went, I've got to write that down? What were you observing? I'm curious to ask if we're going to 80-20 the podcast. Yeah.
I've got a really simple example here. So I was working with a client that was in the e-commerce industry.
Yeah.
And I realized that a lot of the people here that are listening right now, they're probably not running e-commerce stores. But what we changed about this particular client's website was we added a couple of extra words to the add to cart button on their website. They were selling all of these different products. They were actually a music store,
yep,
selling, you know, drum kits and guitars and so forth. And we added the words buy now, pay later, zip pay available to their add to cart button. And literally overnight, they saw a 47% increase in sales.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And this was a multi-million dollar business. 47% increase in sales meant all of a sudden we've got some warehousing problems. We've got some staff problems. We've got some really bad sales problems where now we're making a heap more money than we were expecting to. And we need to go through and, you know, improve these other things structurally in the business. So that one tweak, all we did was make the button a little bit bigger and added a little bit more information. We didn't change anything about their product. We didn't change anything about their offer. All we did was make that button a little bit more visible and a little bit more attractive. And all of a sudden, more people were clicking the add to cart button and more people were buying after adding that item to their cart. And it led to a significant, almost 50% increase in sales through this e-commerce store. And I'm like, hang on, wait, this is weird. This goes against a lot of stuff that we think about marketing. We think about marketing as being the words that we say. But the truth is, a lot of the stuff that happens when it comes to marketing is deeper than that. It's deeper than our words and logic. It's deeper than the emotions that we have. It's kind of like evolutionary bug brain here, where you see something jump out at you and you run away from it, or you see this beautiful berry in the bush and you go, I want to eat that berry. If you can find the thing that's attractive, all of a sudden people want to move towards it. And if you can find the thing that's repulsive and hide that thing, then all of a sudden you're hiding the scary thing that's keeping people away from buying. So that's the kind of theme that I explore inside Unassailable. And I'm looking at the mind games when it comes to marketing and how we can relate with people in a deeper sense, as well as the numbers games when it comes to marketing and how we can improve the performance of marketing.
I think there's a couple of really important topics that I feel compelled to unpack with you on that, because there's a lot going on just in what you've just said there. And marketing, obviously you've been a marketer for your whole life, practically your whole working life, and it's fascinating and it's interesting. For most of the people listening to this podcast, some of them will be innately interested in it, but there'll be a large bunch of people who will be saying, I know it's important, I just want to do my dentistry, and that's okay. No matter where you are on that spectrum, that's okay. Our goal today is to give you some education around marketing so that you can be more effective in your marketing. So let me ask you this question. Dentistry is obviously not at all like an e-commerce store, although emotion's incredibly important in all that we do.
So important.
Yeah. Like, no one goes to the dentist and says, hey, doc, I'm so happy to be here. Can't wait for my filling. hey, while we're at it, just let's have a root canal for fun. No one says that. And so I've got a friend of mine who's a lawyer, and we always argue about who's less popular. And he always thinks dentists are less popular than lawyers. And I always beg to differ. But my point in all of that is that if we understand that human beings are emotional, we make a decision emotionally, we look for the barrier, we run away from whatever it is we're fearing. What's your thinking around dentists getting to understand the emotions of their potential patients? Clearly, when you've got a patient in the room in front of you, there's a conversation. But what about when you're trying to attract new people who you've yet to meet?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think that it changes depending on the type of person that you're looking to meet. That you've got, on the one hand, you've got your cosmetic dentistry people. They're a totally different type of patient than remedial dentistry people, who are totally different from the ongoing dentistry people, the clients that you would bring in. So from that perspective, the conversations that you're likely to have, or the things that you're going to need to highlight and potentially hide for an ongoing dental patient, is going to be different from someone who's a remedial dentistry patient. So you might want to talk about, I suppose, being more pain-free or being more accessible, being more easy to book an appointment with for someone that needs remedial work versus someone that wants a more ongoing relationship. Those sort of conversations might be about trust. They might be about security. They might be about your credentials. They might be about your approachability. They might be that you're not going to browbeat them for not flossing every day.
Yeah.
You know, those simple little things, the conversation changes depending on who you're actually speaking to. So I think that one of the first points here is to have a look at the different types of customers that you're dealing with, and then have a look at what they want and what they want to avoid. And if you can hide the stuff or minimize the stuff or overcome the stuff that they want to avoid and really highlight the things that they actually want access to, then all of a sudden, then you're going to have a much more natural conversation with these people. The weird thing is, a lot of this stuff, you immediately think, all right, so what do I change about my messaging? Okay, so how do you actually make pain-free dentistry part of your messaging? Well, you would use the words pain-free dentistry. Another thing that you could potentially do is have a look at your imagery around your website, for example.
Yep.
So your imagery, does that actually reflect pain-free dentistry? Does this reflect fear or anxiety? Or does it reflect a more comfortable, more easy approach, more confident approach? The imagery that you've got around your website, that can make a really big difference to people's engagement with the website, or in your marketing, or in your brochures, or in your business cards or your next appointment cards that you've got.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a heap of stuff in there. Getting to know the patients is going to be clearly important. So it's about knowing, just so I'm paraphrasing and recapping, It's about A, knowing who that ideal patient is, that avatar, being very clear about what things that they like and what things that they don't like, amplifying the things that they do, or at least drawing attention to those things, and trying not to focus too much on the things that might not be so attractive. So it's about putting your best marketing face on as we go through things. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about marketing more broadly for a moment, because my view around marketing is that a lot of it's vanilla, a lot of it's bland, and a lot of it's ineffective. And so I wanted to ask you what you think are the most common mistakes when it comes to marketing, because again, lots of people listening to this podcast get the need for it. Some are really engaged with it, some less so. But when they get contacted by 17 people in their inbox saying they've got the best SEO, or, you know, we can do this or do that.
17? More like 700.
Exactly. So I guess, what are the common mistakes that you see routinely in marketing? If you could tap someone on the shoulder and say, hey, just don't do that, what are the things you'd say?
So I think the biggest mistake that people make is that they don't actually take responsibility for sales through their website. It's a big call, Brent. Okay, what do you actually mean there?
Yeah, especially for dentists.
I reckon that when you get a website designed, you don't actually talk about, is this going to make sales? I think you talk about, does this look good? Are these the right colors? Is my logo okay?
Yeah.
And none of that matters. In fact, in some of the studies that I've done in the past, split tests and so forth, we've removed logos off websites, and removing the logo off the website has led to a 20% increase in sales.
Really?
You're saying that logos actually help you to make more sales? All of a sudden, we've got the actual data that says logos actually damage your sales.
Wow.
Of course you'd remove the logo at that point. So I think that one of the things that we do really badly is we delegate responsibility to people that aren't really sales or marketing minded. People like technical programmers and design-oriented graphic designers.
Yep.
And we don't actually think about what is the customer journey here. What is the actual process for taking someone from X to Y, from thinking about potentially getting a root canal to actually getting that root canal, or getting that root canal through your dentist practice?
Yeah.
So if we're having a look at the biggest mistake that people make, I reckon it's in delegating responsibility to people that aren't thinking about your marketing. It's that we don't really take responsibility for that customer journey, for what is it going to take to get people to take a step towards us when it comes to actually buying from us. So if we're thinking about that customer journey, I reckon that you would probably take the type of customer, the type of target customer that you ideally want to attract, and think about, okay, how do they get in touch with me? Are they searching on Facebook? Are they searching Google? All right. If they're searching Google, well, are you attracting them through Google Ads, or are you attracting them through SEO? Now that tells you whether or not you need SEO in the first place.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then from there, okay, they get to your website. What is it that they want to know? What is it that they need to be comforted about? What is it that they need to think about or consider, or what's the thought process that's going in their mind that you need to cover off before they'll actually pick up the phone and make an appointment?
Yeah.
And is phone actually the way that they need to make an appointment? Should they be booking into a calendar?
Maybe, especially in today's world. And again, depending on who the avatar is, if they're probably under 30,
yep,
online booking is probably going to be more convenient for them.
I think that this is a really simple sort of conversation that you can have with your practice manager, or you sit down over a glass of wine or a bottle of wine, if you're that way inclined, and actually pull out a pen and paper and to go through this. And I think by doing this, this is one of the tiny little things, one decision that you'll make one time that will help you for the next decade with your marketing.
Yeah. It's really interesting. Last night, just because I'm that sort of dude, I was looking through our Google Analytics, and yes, ladies and gents, I do have a depletion of friends. yeah. The lonely guy sitting at home looking at his Google Analytics, you know, crying into his teacup. That was me. Not quite. But what I was really interested, just coming back to the tiny tweaks thing and tying in with what you're saying, is we run a more boutique style practice. And what was really interesting for us is I thought, okay, when I looked through the analytics, I was looking at the audience and the insights around the audience and some of the, like, the affinity groups and all the rest of it. And what was really interesting, although not surprising, was that a lot of our patients had come through SEO, and they were also looking at things like they're interested in food and dining, they're interested in travel, luxury goods, news and current affairs,
yeah,
which pretty much speaks to our patient base. So really interesting, coming back to the tiny tweaks thing, I just sit there thinking to myself, I should really think about some sort of partnership with some of these organizations.
Yeah, absolutely. And what you're looking at there in Google Analytics, we're getting a bit technical here because we're both data nerds.
Yeah.
That ties in really nicely into Facebook campaigns and so forth.
Yeah.
Because it's already identifying the types of people that are specifically interested in your services.
Yes.
And if you were to have a look at a couple of different analytics accounts, like I do on a Tuesday night, all alone over a cup of tea.
Yeah.
Because that totally relates in a visceral way with what you're talking about there. If you have a look at a couple of different other clients' analytics accounts, you'll start to see that the people visiting your site are very different from the people visiting other people's sites.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at customer profiles, what you've got there is a bit of a customer map of how to attract these people to your website. Potentially Facebook advertising, potentially SEO are the ways to do it.
I've got this feeling that you and I need to hang out on a Tuesday night, drink tea and look at Google Analytics and be the two loneliest guys on the planet. But
I'll bring you
up, right? Yeah, okay, all right. Yeah, I know. Oh, the hard stuff. Okay. All right. So I guess moving on from that just for a moment, one of the other things that I wanted to talk about was myths in marketing.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people out there spruiking, and it's hard for dentists particularly, as I mentioned, some engaged in marketing, some less so. It's hard for them to discern what's true and what's not.
Yeah.
So the first part of the question is, what are the common myths you're seeing being peddled? And the second thing is, how do you choose a good provider? How do you know that they're reputable rather than just being able to market their own services?
Let's start with that second question there, because I think it's the easiest question. I think reputability is less important than performance.
Yep.
I realized that all of a sudden it's like, yeah, get in bed with Dodgy Joe's marketing company. And all of a sudden it's totally unreputable performer or totally unreputable provider here. But it performs. I realize that's potentially how people will be interpreting this. But no, that's what I'm saying. What I'm saying here is if you've got a close eye on your numbers, if you know exactly what's happening in your business, if you can track your customer journey and see, ask yourself, is performance going up or is performance going down?
Yeah.
I think that's more important than any other thing in your marketing. So when you've got your numbers laid out, when you can track your customer journey and see, okay, we changed this little thing. We started following people up properly. And that led to more follow-up bookings and so forth. Go figure. That kind of thing, it's immediately reflected through your numbers. When it comes to myths, I think that it's really easy to buy into some of these myths if you're not actually tracking your numbers.
Okay.
So one of the big myths that I see is the social media myth. And that's the, I'm just going to post out into social media and people will read my stuff and then they'll come into my business. I reckon social media has got a little bit of a half-life, that you post something and that within 24 hours, that post will pretty much never get read again. I also reckon that a lot of the posts that people are putting up onto social media, you're basically just shouting into a black hole and no one's actually listening. And the people that are actually listening, maybe it's your mother or your sister or whoever it is that's liking your stuff on Facebook.
Yeah.
They're supportive, but they don't really care about the things that you're talking about in your social media posts. And likewise, SEO posts, when you're putting stuff onto a blog and hoping that people visit you through the blog, chances are if they're not visiting right away, they're maybe likely to click 6 months down the track when you show up for an obscure Google search, but it's probably not what they're going to do. So valuable, but it often doesn't give you the performance that you're looking for when it comes to your actual marketing. So if we're holding all of our marketing, all of our business process up to a high standard of accountability, the accountability to actually perform, then a lot of the stuff that we would do, we would throw out.
Okay. This is which part?
So the bits that we'd throw out are the bits where we would see particularly low numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But when I first start with a client, the first thing that I do is, all right, let's start building this customer journey and looking at what the numbers are. Okay, you say that you've got this many people visiting your website, but you've got 6 inquiries last month off the website. Okay, that sounds like it's a pretty low conversion rate. Why is that such a low conversion rate? What do we need to do to improve that conversion rate there? So how do you actually deal with those people in a positive way so that you can actually get more clients out of your website?
Yep.
Okay, maybe we need to change something on the website. Maybe we need to make your offer more visible. Maybe we need a better way for people to book into your practice. Maybe we need some sort of calendar booking system. Did that actually lead to a performance increase? Yes, no. If not, what else are we going to try? If it did lead to a performance increase, great. What do you reckon was about this tiny tweak that led to a big performance increase. If it was that we think that it was just because it was more visible on the website, all right, let's scale that up. And all of a sudden, client adds star ratings to their website to say that this product was rated 4.5 stars. As soon as we added those stars, sales went up. Okay, we reckon that the stars are making a big difference. Let's quadruple the size of the stars, make these big, giant stars on the site. All of a sudden, sales skyrocket off this site. I think it was a ridiculous, like 120% increase in sales for that particular
reason. God, okay.
Numbers. So you can follow the numbers through this process.
Yeah.
And you can see, all right, are we getting warmer or are we getting colder?
Yeah.
We're basically playing warmer, colder, or Marco Polo, our marketing, taking little measurements, measuring the temperature. Is this getting warmer or is this getting colder? All right. Well, on that basis, we think we're getting closer to the ideal marketing for our business. So we should keep moving in that direction. And I think that's basically how you would do things. So before you even start thinking about providers, before you even start looking at SEO or AdWords or Facebook or whatever it is, I think the first thing is to look at the numbers in the website, look at the numbers in your business, look at the numbers in your marketing, and have a look at what's performing well that you can move towards,
yeah,
and what's performing poorly that you either need to fix or get rid of.
Okay. So really what I'm hearing you say is it's an iterative process.
Yeah.
And yeah, the Marco Polo thing, I guess, you know, to use marketing speak, is split test, split test, split test. And you're just making small changes, seeing if we're moving in the right direction or the wrong direction. If we're moving in the right direction, just keep going. And if we're not, then change tack. Okay. So myth busted, tick. Fantastic. So I wanted to ask you a bit of a question when it comes to marketing at the moment, trends, things that might surprise you. And I understand that there are marketing principles and fundamentals that don't change. But from your perspective, or actually before we get into the trends, what do you think, you've outlined some of the the principles and foundations already, but are there any other foundations that you think that dentists need to be aware of in their marketing before we get onto trends and things that could influence?
Yeah, there's one that I'm seeing a lot recently. This is one of the themes in a lot of the client work that I'm doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the difference between personal messaging, promotional messaging, and professional messaging.
Mm, okay, tell me more about that.
One of the things that I see is emails going out to people and the very low response rate that emails get. And we can change the medium of those emails from email to SMS,
yep,
get a better response rate. Or we could change it to letters and get different response rates, sometimes better, sometimes worse. But if we're looking at the messaging inside these emails or inside these communications that are going out to clients, quite often they're very dry, they're very professional communications. They say, "Dear sir, you know, just a reminder that your appointment is due on this date. Please contact us at this number if you can't make it."
Yep.
Okay. Good message. Really good message. If we replace that with promotional messaging, we tend to get a slightly better response rate from our communications. And we say, "Man saves himself from expensive dental bill by having regular checkups. Dear sir," you know, or "Dear John."
Yeah, just
a reminder that your dental appointment is due very soon. Da-da-da-da-da. That gets a slightly better response rate.
I do love that, by the way. That's a fantastic... Ladies and gents, write that down.
Beyond that, we can actually get an even better response rate with very personal messaging.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm seeing recently is quite often, especially when you're an expert in your field, such as dentists, and that people feel like they have a close relationship with you.
Yep.
You know, you actually spend a lot of time in their mouth. Then all of a sudden, people feel like they have this deeper connection with you and they respond better to personal messaging. So instead of "Dear sir," we say, "Hey, John, Dr. Brent here, dentist from Heidelberg Dentistry. Just want to reach out about your appointment. I would love to see you in the office soon. You're due for a checkup soon. Hope you're doing well, Brent."
Yep.
That sort of messaging is getting a lot of cut through these days. We're surrounded by all of this, "Buy my stuff," and all of this, "I'm so good." And this promotional messaging and this professional messaging is no longer resonating with us in the same way that social or personal messaging is relating to us. So if we have a look at the ways that we can actually make our messaging more approachable and more personal rather than professional and promotional, all of a sudden we seem to get more cut through on that messaging.
Okay. That makes perfect sense to me because for me, marketing is as much about relationships as anything else and business is about relationships. So I think the more relational we can be, the more we're going to speak to a person in a way that makes sense. And
clearly you tailor that personal message based on who you're speaking to. So I really love that. So that's fantastic in terms of getting that messaging right. I really understand that and the foundation that that makes up part of. What do you think about trends? What do you see is happening in your marketing now that's going to change in the future? Things that you think are coming down the pipeline? What sort of things do you think we need to be aware of?
So I've been doing this for about 20 years, I worked out recently. I started with my first marketing business as a 16-year-old web designer working from my parents' garage in Wheelers Hill in Melbourne, and had a whole bunch of clients that were working with me back then. And back then, it was so easy to attract clients online. Even though there weren't so many people online, the response rates of actually working with or attracting someone off a website were huge. And it was so cheap to do because compared to things like actually picking up the phone, which has got a bit of a base cost to it, actually picking up the phone and paying someone to pick up the phone, or sending a letter out to someone, which back then cost a good 30 cents, I think it was, for a stamp.
Yep.
So compared to those different marketing channels that you could use at the time, it was so easy and so cheap that digital marketing just looked like it was going to be the future.
Yep.
I think we've got a little bit of a reversal of that trend.
I think so too.
Everyone these days has their own website. Every dental practice in Melbourne, I'm certain, every dental practice in Australia, every dental practice in the world almost, I would say, has their own website. And they've got email, and a lot of them have ads going out on Facebook or on Google or wherever. And some of them are doing better at it than others. But I think that it's become almost commoditized, a lot of these strategies here. And now what's happening is the strategies that used to take a bit more of an investment of time, a bit more of an investment of effort, and a bit more of an investment of money, nobody's using them anymore. I received a book recently from a colleague, and it came in express post. And you better believe that that express post envelope was the first thing that I opened that day, before all the bills and before the Dear Homeowner stuff.
Yeah, yep.
Dear Homeowner, good. Express post, amazing.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good example of putting a little bit more time, a little bit more effort, a little bit more attention into your marketing, and all of a sudden it cuts through a lot better.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a little bit of a reversal when we're talking about trends away from mass marketing, away from digital marketing, to this personal one-on-one stuff, like that personal messaging stuff that we were talking about a moment ago, that all of a sudden, if you can make things more one-on-one, more attention-based, less scalable, that becomes a competitive advantage in your marketing. It's something that nobody else in your industry is doing, and that's going to make you stand out.
Yeah, I really love that. And just what you're describing there, I sometimes refer to as the initiative gap because it does take more effort and it takes a bit more thought. It takes a bit more money in some instances, but definitely more effort. And what I see is that most people won't be prepared and willing to put in that effort. So therefore, the opportunity for those people that do is vast.
Yes.
And so I think that that's fantastic. Brent, I'm really conscious that you've got a lot on your plate and I don't want to hold you up for your day, but I do have one last question for you.
Sure.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about coming back to, it's a bit of a theme building on the last one, old school marketing, because I love old school marketing. And you're saying that 20 years ago, you were building websites and all the rest of it, which, yeah, you must have started when you were in nappies, but still, because you look pretty fresh-faced. But one other thing, so I used to build a lot of websites and run SEO and PPC campaigns as well. I ran a digital agency for a while. But what I find really fascinating and interesting is just going back another 10 years prior to that and thinking about all the things that we used to do that, again, have gone a little bit out of favor. The pendulum, as you said, has gone a lot towards digital. Are there any particular old school marketing things that for people listening to this podcast that you might think, that's worth a look at? Think about this or think about that.
One of the old school marketing techniques that still works very well is something called lumpy mail.
Yeah.
So lumpy mail used to be you'd attach a toothbrush or something like that, $1 coin or a $2 coin or whatever it is, to a letter and then mail it to someone. And it's actually used a lot in the charity space these days.
Mm.
Sometimes you'll get a bunch of stickers or you'll get a 10-cent coin or something like this. And the stickers will say, here's some stickers. If you feel like giving us some money back, here's where to make a donation to our charity. Or the lumpy mail, the 10-cent coin will say, 10 cents can immunize someone against polio in third world countries. You should donate some money. And here's how you can donate many 10 cents to our charity. So this sort of charities are great because they do so much testing in their marketing, and everything has to be accountable because they need, obviously, if they're doing any marketing, they need to make far more than what they're spending. So that lumpy mail example of attaching a toothbrush to a reminder letter, for example, that sort of stuff is really old school. This is 80s and 90s sort of, I'm saying really old school for me, really old school marketing that gets a lot of cut through. In fact, there was a guy by the name of Gary Halbert that used to do this really well.
Yeah.
Gary Halbert used to send the coat of arms letter, and it used to say, "Dear Mr. Green," to Jesse Green, I've been researching your family history, and here's your coat of arms. If you'd like a copy of the coat of arms plus a book that says this is what your family history is, reply back to us with a check. Back in the check days, before the actual credit card details days. And he used to have a whole branch at a bank whose job it was to open up mail bags full of checks and to bank them into his bank account way back in the day. So these sort of strategies, these old school strategies, when we're talking about what was working on 30 years ago, we're not so much talking about putting a ad in the Sun Herald or the Argus or the whatever was around back then. We're not talking about the yellow pages. There are strategies that even today are still very relevant, like lumpy mail, that still get a lot of cut through these days. And really, you're still sending basically the same thing. Just the tiny tweak that you're making to it is that you're adding something of value, something of weight, something of additional care. And that's what makes all the difference here.
It really is. And again, it's a tiny tweak and it makes a big difference. I really thank you for that. It's wonderful. And Gary Halbert is, oh man, copywriting genius. And did you read the Gary Halbert letters and all those sorts of things?
Religiously.
Yeah.
They were my little marketing Bible growing up.
Exactly. So, yeah, I'm with you. Maybe we can do that on a Tuesday night, looking at the analytics at the same time. We can pore over Gary Halbert letters because life in the fast lane. Brent, you've been incredibly generous with your time today, mate. And I want to thank you on a couple of levels. One is because you've been really generous with your time, but you've been even more generous with your knowledge, your insights, your wisdom. And what I really appreciate about our conversation today is it's immensely practical. It's not erudite theory that you need to be a PhD student to understand. This is practical stuff that anyone listening to the podcast can apply immediately for great effect. I also really like the fact that you've mentioned that it's the tiny tweaks, it's paying attention to those details that makes all the difference. And if you stack one tiny tweak on top of another tiny tweak on top of another tiny tweak, you get big changes. And this is what I think is really important, is a lot of people think that marketing is about hitting the ball out of the park every single time, but it's not. It's about making those small changes, those small iterations, and really nailing that down. So I think you've articulated that very eloquently, really practically. I just want to say thank you. You've been incredibly generous and kind today. So from all of us here, our deepest thanks.
Thank you. This has been a lot of fun, Jesse.
Oh, look, mate, let's do it again. I'm looking forward to catching up soon. And look, I can't wait. I think we're going to have another round of this. This has been too much fun to pass up.
Thank you.
Cheers, mate.
See you.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.